This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. If letter-writing campaigns, phone calls to government officials, and peaceful protests won't shut the deadly training grounds of the School of the Americas, then asking Latin American presidents to stop sending their soldiers to be trained there may be the answer. We will speak with Lisa Sullivan Rodriguez about her meeting with Roy Bourgeois and Venezuela's president, Hugo Chavez. Lisa Sullivan Rodriguez has been a Marinole missioner for 20 years. She and her husband, Marinole missioner David Rodriguez, raised three children in the barrios of Barquisimientos, Venezuela. Lisa helped form a community center where children learn how to play traditional Venezuelan instruments. She regularly leads delegations in which people from the states come to dialogue with Venezuela's poor, their community leaders, and the church leaders who support them. Eleanor Ostrinsky speaks with Lisa Sullivan Rodriguez about the current political climate in Venezuela and her role in negotiating a meeting between the School of the Americas Watch founder, Marinole priest Roy Bourgeois, and Venezuela's president, Hugo Chavez.
What's it like in Venezuela on a political front?
I've seen in my time in Latin America so many efforts to bring about change that's so deeply needed. You know, it's a continent which for so long, the wealth has been concentrated in few hands, and the vast majority are poor and cannot access the wealth of their nations and basic services. So what's happened in Venezuela is what I would see as a real effort through democracy to drastically, dramatically change that concentration of wealth. And there have been about seven elections starting in 1998, all of which have had large participation. The people drafted and wrote a new constitution. I saw people in my neighborhood participate in that. There's been tremendous confrontation. There's been a lot of opposition to these attempted changes. That's why there was a coup in 2002. But that coup was turned around. And just recently there were elections in which there was an affirmation of the current government. And it's a time of hope, I would say, from the perspective of the poor.
And from the perspective of everybody else?
Well, the poor tend to be the majority, which are about 60%. So there are interests who are feeling, threatened. For example, the oil company. Oil is what is the major source of Venezuela's income. And although this industry was nationalized in 1976, it really was becoming a private industry within the nation. And that has been turned around under this new administration. And the profits of oil are now being directed differently. For example, throughout the nation, there's a tremendous programs of literacy and education. I think you could go to any barrio or any small town in Venezuela today and you'll find groups of people gathered and involved in this literacy program, which is funded by the government, as well as healthcare. For the first time, there's a program called Barrio Adentro, which means into the barrio. Let's bring the healthcare providers into the barrio rather than having people come and wait in long lines and perhaps never get medical attention. So certainly those who benefited from some of these huge oil profits and political favoritism are not too happy with what's happening. So there has been tremendous tension, division. My children have felt it deeply. We've all felt it. So I would acknowledge that it's a time of tension and division, while I feel like it's also a time of hope where there could be change through the ballot.
And when you say you personally felt the tension or your children have felt the tension, is that because you're perceived as an American?
No, not at all. You know, Venezuelans are such delightful, open, hospitable people that they kind of like you no matter where you're from. My daughter has been in high school during this time of deep divisions, and her home base and her world is the barrio where I would say easily 80 to 90% of people have been in favor of the Chavez administration. Whereas her school is a private middle-class school, and there's been tremendous opposition to the government and anger and, I would say, hatred to the point where they went on strike for several months and they just closed the doors of all the schools. And so it was a very challenging time for her because she felt like these changes that were being attempted were so important to her neighbors, to her friends, and just to her made such sense. To the point where she was kind of ostracized and really punished in some ways because she kind of took a position that was not very popular.
Give us an example of what it means for those people who have benefited mm-hmm. over a long period of time from the natural wealth of Venezuela. And what does it mean to be one of those people who has not benefited mm-hmm. in any mm-hmm. way?
Sure. Since I've been there in the mid-80s, public schools were so overcrowded, you had to have three shifts. They looked really like chicken coops. They were little cement hot buildings with tin roofs and no ventilations and no facilities whatsoever, even bathrooms half the time. And even to get into one of the three shifts, you know, mothers would get up at 2 in the morning to get in line to register their children. So, and these are basic services a country should have. Likewise, health care, really no services in the poor communities. So when you would look at the wealth that Venezuela would have on paper and then compare it to the quality of life of its citizens, there was something, you know, shockingly wrong going on. So this dramatically shifted when President Chavez was elected. And they've really cracked down on taxes, for example, before everybody could evade paying taxes. And also, there has been a lot of really harsh rhetoric on the part of the government and of President Chavez from time to time that wealthier people, they may not feel included in this.
So you host delegations. How did you start doing this and why?
I think people who have an interest in Latin America have realized that there's something interesting happening in Venezuela. And as is the case with many countries, in the U.S. press, it's really hard to kind of understand what's really happening. You know, Mary Knoll does have a reputation for being an organization that is solidly with the poor. And so when people kind of want to hear that other alternative voice, I think Mary Knoll really is in the forefront of their minds. At least I can say that in Latin America. And we had delegations come, and I took them all around to meet with many government officials. We met with labor leaders who were in opposition. We went into the barrios, met with religious leaders, some who were involved in government projects, some who were against those projects. And then another delegation I led, we were able to meet with President Chavez. Roy Bourgeois was on that delegation.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that meeting?
That was very amazing. Well, I had gotten word from Roy Bourgeois that he really wanted to start reaching out to some Latin American governments to ask them to not send troops to the School of the Americas. And when he contacted me, I said, I don't know what I could do because he's not really a personal friend. I didn't really know him. But we were able to get a meeting with the vice president and immediately after they held a press conference. And Roy expressed in that press conference the hope that he was seeing in the barrios of Venezuela. And the reason he had come was to ask the president to not send troops to the SOA. And I got a call from the president 5 minutes later saying that he happened to see us on TV and invited us to his national television show, which is the most watched show in the country. It's called Alo Presidente. It's on every Sunday. So we came with really no preparation to this show. He didn't really know what we were going to say. We didn't know what he was going to say. And on national TV, Roy spoke about the struggle, the movement to close the SOA, and Chavez immediately responded that he was well aware of the role of this school, that had trained assassins of Romero and so many innocent people who had died in Latin America. So he approached us before the TV show and invited us to a private meeting, Roy and I. And we went the next day, and he was waiting for us. He'd been meeting with some generals first, I guess, to make sure he had the clear picture of how many troops they had at the SOA currently. And we had an amazing meeting of, I'd say, about an hour and a half, in which they each shared their own stories of going to jail for a cause and Roy and Chavez, and we were really able to dialogue the whole situation of the School of the Americas, and he listened deeply, and we gave him as a gift photos of the Mary Knoll sisters who had been assassinated, Ida and Mara, and that was very meaningful to him. And he asked Roy for his blessing, which was another really beautiful moment, and he said that he would get back to us, and he did. About a month later, I was notified that they'd made the decision to no longer send troops. So it was a very joyous occasion for us to feel that a president of a Latin American nation had heard this message and realized this school, which is supposedly helping their countries, really had been doing the opposite. It's the first country which has said, we will not send troops to this school of assassins, as Chavez refers to it. So
that's a huge, amazing turn of events.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm actually curious, since you're here and you can put us into that meeting, tell me about these stories of spending time in jail for a cause on either side.
Roy shared, of course, his stories of climbing the tree in Fort Benning and being told to come down. He played the Sermon of Romero.
Well,
you know,
our
troop.
Listeners may or may not know anything about
sure.
it.
Sure. Roy is a Mary Knoll priest from the Bayous of Louisiana, had been a Vietnam decorated vet, Purple Heart. And when he was in Vietnam, he really began to realize that there was tremendous poverty and a need to respond to other nations in a very different way than through war. So when he came back to the U.S., he shifted gears and became a priest, went to Bolivia, and in Bolivia became even more engaged with accompanying the poor of that country at a time of a dictatorship, a very repressive dictatorship, Hugo Banzer. And eventually Roy was asked to leave, or that he would not be able to stay safely in that country because of his accompaniment of the poor. So when he returned here, he really felt that burning desire to share the story of his neighbors, the people that he'd lived with. And he realized that in Fort Benning, Georgia, at the School of the Americas, troops, at this point mostly Salvadoran troops in the early 80s, were being trained supposedly to improve the armies of Latin America. But what he found out was that the military responsible for the terrible atrocities in Central America, including the deaths of Monsignor Romero, the Archbishop of El Salvador, and the Marianal churchwomen, were soldiers trained at this school. And they later discovered the torture manuals and the tactics that these soldiers were trained in, really, of hunting down their own people. And so Roy believed that people can have a change of heart. So he and two other friends got some military uniforms from a local Salvation Army store, walked into Fort Benning's, climbed up a tree with a boombox, and when the nighttime came, he blasted to the barracks where the Salvadoran soldiers were being trained the last homily of Monsignor Romero. And this homily, Romero speaks to the soldiers. He says, you know, I speak to you, children of God, and in the face of the order of your superiors to kill, I ask you, I demand that you obey the order of God. Do not kill. You know, lay down your arms. And a day later, Romero was killed. So Roy played this sermon from the tree. His idea is, you know, these soldiers are just folks from these small towns in Salvador. And of course, it had huge consequences. He was brought down and he was tried. He was put in jail. But a movement began to build until eventually this school was closed. It was such a big movement that they closed the school as the School of the Americas. Unfortunately, they opened a new school in the same place with a new name, but really the similar practices. So that's why this struggle goes on, to bring that demand to close the SOA and to remind people how these tax dollars of U.S. citizens are being used in a very different way than most citizens would want them to be used.
Have you lost anyone due to the death squads trained in the School of the Americas? Do you know anyone who has? Email us. Go to www.maryknoll.org/voices. Just click on Contact Us. Or you can call us at 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 1-877-MARYKNOLL. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Lil Mattingly and Lisa Sullivan Rodriguez are just two of the voices of our world. This week's show was produced by Eleanor Ostrinsky, and I'm your host, Eileen Bott. To suggest a topic or for more information on today's guests, just go to our program's website, www.maryknoll.org/voices. To get Mary Knoll Magazine in English or Spanish, please call 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 1-877-MARYKNOLL. If you missed a portion of this program, you can catch us on our website, www.maryknoll.org/voices. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.